they hear about these crazy black market prices. Oh, this is selling for $5,000 a pound in the street. Yeah, if we put this in our brand, we're going to have the hottest shit in the store. Right. Meanwhile, they don't realize that the market it's in the store is very different from the market that's on the street. And people in the street don't want to pay those taxes at the store. And people that go to the store don't want to deal with people that are from the street.
All right, High Rise Podcast, always pushing. Welcome back.
Very early stages, the cops came to my house and accused me of selling drugs.
What NFTs are doing is creating these communities.
Just sold that shit to High Tide for 10 mil.
The exact same feeling I got from them is the feeling I got from the weed minimum. And that's why I went into cannabis full time.
Welcome back to the High Rise Podcast. This week we have a very special guest. We have Brett, one of the co-founders of Wonder Brett, one of the literally dopest fucking cannabis brands out in California, or the world for that matter. Been working with Wonder Brett for years. Always been super cool. Always had a great product. Super stoked to have you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, happy to be here.
Welcome to the show.
Super stoked, dude. You guys are always a good time. Like, when I come here, I'm always like, oh, yeah, this is going to be fun. I'm in.
Try to keep it interesting.
Yeah. No, it's always interesting. You guys.
Never a dull moment here at the
Try
the
to mansion. Keep you on your toes.
Yeah, High Rise House is legendary. Yeah. Like, you guys really came out, like, strong and did it right. Like, a lot of people can't really connect the way that you guys did, but.
It's kind of funny because, we had no idea what we were doing.
That's exactly
that's usually how it goes, right?
Yeah,
you just dive into the fire and fucking figure it out as you go. So now we're here almost 2 years in. It's been a wild ride.
It's been a wild ride.
You've been to a couple of the parties, right?
Yeah. I mean, dude, I think there was 300,000-400,000 people the last one. You know, I mean, I know that for the millions of listeners for this show, that it's hard for them to imagine that there would be 300,000, but it's real.
Yeah.
It's bigger than anything you can imagine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's like EDC here in Beverly Hills.
Just like EDC.
No, literally our neighbors are fucking throwing EDC, dude. Like, we're just telling Brett how we have these kids that just moved in and they're ruining the neighborhood. We have these crazy kids move in and they're throwing these parties or selling like $1,000 tickets. They're like promoting it on IG, random ass people.
There's the letter from the neighbors. I read it. This shit's real.
They're not playing.
$1,000 tickets, dude. It's crazy.
So yeah, it's been nuts. They've had helicopters, like 300 cars, cops. Like, dude, they're just, these kids are reckless.
I like it.
So yeah. So yeah, Beverly Hills, we're, you know, we ruined the neighborhood. Now we started a trend. So sorry, neighbors.
I wonder if they knew that you guys were right here and like, we can get away with it because High Rise is right there.
So it was funny. They moved in and like a weekend, I was like, I have to know, there has to be like a layer of separation between, we have to know somebody that knows these kids here or whatever, right? And I'm like laying in bed and I get a DM and it's a video of somebody from that house filming our house. And they're like, oh, we're watching yours, like fucking with me. And I'm like, oh, what's up? Did you guys move in? And it's like, end up, it's like a kid that's been here a bunch of times, like one of his friends got it or whatever. So like, oh, the weed guys are down there. We'll be good. But yeah, I think people think we're a lot more disrespectful and crazy than we actually are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the, I don't know, they probably like thought we were going way crazier than in reality we're like not really going that crazy, you know?
No, I mean, the 700-foot water slide off the back, ice sculptures. Yeah. It's pretty chill.
Yeah.
Zip lines.
Yeah. For Beverly Hills, what would you expect?
Yeah.
Like Richie Rich.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Blank check.
Blank check. There you go.
Mm-hmm. The helicopter pad. I see it. People coming and going all the time off of that thing.
Yeah, the helicopters and hose. Watch out for that. It's our new event series with Wonder Brett.
Yeah, we're sponsoring that.
The title sponsor.
It's a private event.
All right. So, hell yeah. So,
what else is cracking?
So, I mean, shit. We don't even know what's cracking over here anymore. A million things. We've been spending a lot of time with that Green Street building.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
Are you guys still moving in there or no?
Yeah, we're going to move in there.
Hell yeah.
I move slow, though. Yeah, like, everybody always wants, like, they just think we can move so fast, like we're some big company. And I'm like, you guys have no idea. Like, we're the most, like, you know, scrappy group. There's only, like, you know, 6-7 of us that really run the company.
Right.
And we all wear so many different hats. So it's like, I'm like, an event. I'm like, damn, I'm like, these events, like, take it out of us, you know, because we don't have a big staff to be like, yeah, we'll just send four guys over with trucks and move everything, you know.
Yeah, like move shit around from here to there and move the,
Yeah, it's just not that way. Everybody wants to think that, you know, cannabis or is something like some really mature, like, legacy industry where you're like, oh, they've got, you know, decades of money that they're sitting on, you know?
Like, that's like probably one of the biggest misconceptions, right? Everybody just thinks everybody's swimming in cash and fucking
totally
rolling in dough. And it's like, yeah, no, it's
not, you know, at all. Yeah. Like, not unless you're trapping, you know? If you're trapping, like, you might be making some money right now. Like, it's probably, you know, it's, you know, it's an unfair fight with the, we're in the rec market, you know, we pay, you know, all these things, license fees to the state, to the city, tons of taxes for all types of, you know, things they overtax and abuse us for because it's cannabis, you know.
They get you at every fucking thing, right?
The taxes that exist on cannabis don't exist in any other industry, actually. Like, so how could, in a fair business world where fair markets exist and all these things, like, it's hard enough to run a business in the regular rules.
It's hard enough to run a regular business, yeah.
And then you're like, okay, yeah, like, we're going to make it weed legal for you, but we're going to make it so hard, overtax it, and then we're going to give you, you know, no help, no subsidies, no write-offs, none of these things. They literally thought of every which way they could to make it, like, so that you couldn't succeed.
Right?
What they didn't realize is, like, even with all of those barriers, like, weed guys are just going to do this anyway, and we're going to fight it, and we're going to try to change the system. But, like, it's so counterproductive and the complete opposite of what was supposed to happen in the California market system when you legalize a product, you know, from a black market product. Legalizing it is supposed to make it cheaper and more affordable, and the black market's not supposed to be able to beat you in pricing.
Right?
Like, that's just the way that it's going, though, right now. I'd say the black market has a 40 to 50% price advantage. And, you know, don't be surprised then when you see some of your favorite cannabis brands just off the face of the map overnight.
Right.
Like, you'd be like, yeah, I love this brand, I'm smoking this all the time. And then, boom, they're gone. And it won't just be them. It'll be this domino effect of this cultivation actually supplied this brand, and this brand. And now all those are gone. And
you just did multiple different, yeah.
You just didn't realize that they were sourcing it from this guy and sourcing it from this guy. We're a little bit different in Long Beach. We grow everything ourselves, right? So we have a different business model, but it's already extremely hard regardless, right?
Right.
And when you throw some of these other little factors in there, and when you really dig into the layers of how stuff works, like with excise taxes and stuff like that, that you have to pay these things every 30 days, whether you get paid on that pound or not.
And your cash flow is always tied up, I'm sure, with net, you know, I can only imagine, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not most of the industry works on terms.
Yep.
And if you don't get paid on that pound, right? So, like, you paid, you know, a few thousand dollars to create that pound through the process of all these licensing and your packaging, your labor, your distro, all this stuff to deliver it there, that you drop it off to a store, they don't pay because either the market's bad or they have a bad business model or something like that. You lose on that pound, and then the state's like, yeah, still we want that, you know, 27% excise tax on that pound. You're like, you want me to pay you taxes on a pound that I just lost $2,000 on?
Yep.
So how is that sustainable for, you know what I mean? Like, you lose 1 pound, right, and you erase maybe 10 or 15 pounds worth of profit, depending on what SKU it is. And that, don't quote me on those numbers. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but it's pretty close to something around there, right? And just not to be on, like, the serious tip too much. I want to be having fun over here with you guys. But, like, it would be, you know, in everybody's best interest if they would – like how they did in Washington, they made it a COD market so that not that the stores are such bad actors, it's just they're victims to the systems themselves with taxes and everything else. But, you know, the store is the only place where it is COD. There's no terms when you walk in as a customer. You buy a product, you paid for it. That's the only place that's in the whole cannabis system, if you really think about it, where money...
And that's mandated by the actual state.
Yeah. It could be the same thing when it came to the... how they did for stores. They could say, hey, stores, you know what? Like, we're not allowing you to have terms.
Right.
You have to buy products COD. And then stores would act very differently, and they would pick accordingly properly to what they would actually be able to sell through.
Probably limit their selection, right? They'd be more selective.
I mean, stores play games where they'll take stuff from terms off from you, and then they'll take terms from you and rob Peter to Piper. Yeah, that whole game, and you know, it's a whole shell game they're playing sometimes, and then they make it out of it, and everybody gets paid in the end, maybe, or they go bankrupt and write off a lot of bad debt, and you know, during that process, the company that runs off all that bad debt, but maybe along the way, that guy was making $1 million a year running that company, so he walked away with all the money, ran the company dry, and then you know. It's like treated it like it was a burner cell phone.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, literally just use it up and onto the next one or whatever.
Yeah, like your neighbors over there. Yeah. Like house. Yeah,
onto the next mansion.
Yeah, onto the next mansion, you know, where we could charge $1,000 a ticket and run it up.
Yep,
you know?
Keep selling these tickets. Yeah, for real. So something that like is interesting to me about your brand is since day one, the marketing and the branding has always stood out like pretty significantly. And we actually get this, we hear this a lot from a lot of our clients and just general kind of consensus, like just from the boxes to like the colors, like it's always just been, I feel like your packaging and branding is like the best, or if not some of the best, you know what I mean? How did that come about? Like, was like, what was the thinking behind the branding of the company?
Well, wow. It's like, it was an evolution, right? I can't sit there and say that at one point the light bulb went off in the first year about how all the packaging should go. But at first, like my partner Cameron Damrick and I, we founded the company together and we started together. And another buddy of mine, Jonas, and a few other guys, right, were the original Team Wonder Bread. And a few other people I should name too, like, you know, our extraction guy who makes all of our, these vape carts and our hash, you know, Noah, Righteous Cats, one of the most amazing extraction, talented extraction artist there is, you know, like, and just made it out of, you know, pure love and passion. Didn't go to school for it, and you know, just figured it out, kind of like how we did with this too, right? And you know, I've been growing weed for a long time. We've been growing weed since the late 90s, and we were known for growing like really high grade quality weed, Cam and myself and a few other guys. And when we made the brand in 2013 or 14, it was the medical market, and it started with, it wasn't this shape box. It was actually a different shape box. They made us change everything once, you know, 2018 rolled in with recreational and childproof containers. So it was like, this is why our box is this shape. Now our box used to be more flat, you know, probably half as tall as this and much wider. The jar was this wide jar that you could, as soon as the weed went in there, you could see the whole eighth without having to kind of dig around and get it. And I really like that jar still to this day. And we are thinking about going back to that now because we can get so much custom stuff made, right? But we started with the white box, right? And that was, we were just putting OG Kush and cookies in there. And those were the first two strains that we were growing as a brand. And we had always been looking for other flavors. Like me personally, like if there was a new strain or a new flavor, like I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I went to Humboldt because I wanted to go to where the best weed was for college. So I went to there for a few years. And
was, that was your college, or did you really go to college there?
I was just ill prepared for a lot of that, right? Like my parents, I worked in a family catering business, so we just worked all the time, and we weren't like a sophisticated family. Like, so it was just like we ran catering jobs and you know, weddings and parties and stuff, and we did really good, and we did it for you know, movie and TV, like craft services and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We did, you know, a bunch of famous TV shows. It was cool to be around as a kid. And, but no one really told me like what I was supposed to do when I got to college. Like, I didn't know. I was like, what? This, you just dropped me off here at 17 and it's like 500 kids partying in this big building and you expect me to go to class and do all this stuff and be responsible? I've never been responsible. Yeah. Like, and I'm a stoner and I'm already all this, right? So, I took the first 2 years pretty seriously and went to the classes and did a lot of stuff. By third year, didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd taken all these classes that didn't make any sense anyway.
You're just meeting like hella growers and fucking everybody's great, right?
Everybody's so got like, great strains, yeah. And I'm like cruising home on the weekends with good weed and, you know, just enjoying life, right? But going back to the brand and stuff like that, like we were always, at least myself, have always been, I think, the most enthusiastic in our group, right, about chasing down new genetics, right? Like if somebody was whispering about this great strain, oh, you have to see this, you have to try that. I would drive 2 days.
To see what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, multiple states, wherever. So always about flavors and just like I've always been just blown away by the experience of cannabis, how it makes you feel, how I love it, how like it brings people together that places that you wouldn't normally, you know,
meet different walks of life and like everybody's yeah. in the same kind of vibe.
Anywhere from 18 to 80, you know, or 100, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like you can connect with somebody over a joint and some good weed and people appreciate good weed. And so, with the flavors just intuitively clicked with color. Like mm-hmm. it was just one day where we're like, oh man, we're going to do this pineapple strain because we have this great pineapple, the pineapple OG. And we're like, well, what color should we do the box? Like, and we was like, we should do yellow, like instinctively. Like,
yeah.
And then the next thought was like, well, we have this other orange strain and we should use orange. And it was just like, I don't know how anybody's not thinking of this. Like, this is the best format. There's color to match the flavor.
If it's a Wonder product or not. You can go to a dispensary and everything kind of looks the same kind of for the most part, but yours is like so distinct in its branding. It like yeah. you always know it's a Wonder Brett.
You can see it across the dispensary.
That was the goal. Like when we talked about this early on, we were like, we want everything to be so distinct about the brand that we use Coca-Cola all the time as a reference. And some people were like, oh, that doesn't do your brand justice. But in this context of Coca-Cola's consistency and iconic, like you could see a Coca-Cola can in the gutter from across the street and be like, that's Coke.
You know.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that red, that white, that however that is, that shape of the packaging, you know. And then I got to say we were influenced by Apple, you know, we love Apple products and their high-end packaging for their phone and stuff like that was like, well, we should make a nice box. Because we don't want these jars to get broken. That was really the logic behind it. Was like, we want the weed to come in glass jars. And, oh, man, like, what happens if the glass jar breaks? You know, like, we were really worried about that for a long time. Fortunately, we've never had a jar break in the process. These boxes really do.
They're hella sturdy, yeah.
Yeah, they do. Like, we were throwing them at the wall, like, as hard as we could, like a pitcher, throwing them up in the air as high as we could. And, after, like, 50 throws at the wall, the box didn't even really fall apart.
That's the video. We need to do a video of that. Test their boxes.
Yeah, I mean,
dude, chucking them at the wall.
Dude, the box doesn't really fall apart, and it starts to crack in certain spots, but it holds together, and the jar doesn't break.
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay, there's no way. Like, if we get a broken jar, like somebody ran over, there was a truck, you know, like so.
And yeah, and obviously it matches. You want to match what's inside the box, obviously. You know what I mean? So it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
I feel like when 64 happened and all these licensed brands came out, they were all trying to everybody's trying to break the stigma. Everybody's trying to make their shit like alcohol. Everybody wants to make it luxurious with, you know, and everybody, I feel like, steered away from the bright colors and the neon colors in the beginning of 64, where I feel like you guys embraced that and that set you guys apart. Because everybody's going for trying to go for like the classy look to not look like cannabis.
Yeah.
And then that's what we always do. We double down on stoners. Everybody's trying to break the stigma, but like, you know, our success is because we cater to the stoners and you guys had the neon stuff that really stood out on the shelves when everybody else is going for white and gold and black and gold and
wooden and black and gold. You know? Like, honestly, it seems so cool in your mind. You're like, oh, we're going to have this black, sleek packaging. Like, but honestly, like, it just doesn't pop. It doesn't catch your eye. Like, it makes the whole shelf actually look dark in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, the colors are so fun. I think it's a good message within them as well. Like, you know, like, let's keep moving forward with equality and, you know, diversity and all these things. And I think it just, logical and, this seemed like there was nothing else we were going to, like, nothing else made sense to us.
It was just natural to you guys.
Yeah, it was like inevitable. Yeah. Like, this was our design going to be our way forever. Like, this seemed like that, you know? Like, the colored boxes, just, we had all these ideas, like, immediately. Like, we've been guys that were hunting strains forever and creating strains and breeding. And we were like, the vision became very clear early on. Like, we want to build out a capsule where, you know, here you have the melon and the melon pre-roll and the melon, you know, vape cart and the melon fruit chews. And you build out this strain in every format that it can be enjoyed in. So that was like, and it was a nice visual, beautiful capsule and stuff, right? Yeah. So like, all this is inspired by like other great artists out there, right? Like from our childhood, like, you know, whether it was like video games or Fruit Stripe gum or, you know, like, like all of these things, like, you know, I was always, I was an 80s kid. So neon was popping in the 80s. Yep, like,
hell yeah.
I remember having like everything orange, like
everything neon.
Yeah. Like orange is my favorite color out there. Right. Yeah. So it's like, it is still today. And yeah, I remember having like, all, I'm always attracted, like even the motorcycle I built when, you know, when I had, you know, too much disposable, I built this motorcycle. It was this orange motorcycle. It looked like a diamond going down the road. It was way too nice. That's, it was like the days of like, you know, what was those shows like OC Chopper and all these, yeah, like
West Coast Choppers.
Yeah, like all these things like that were on TV. And like I built one of those bikes and like I rode it for about a month. I rode it home and somebody thought it was really nice and they stole it that night. Oh, dude, it took me like a year to build this thing and it was like, boom, you know, like. So it was beautiful. It was orange, and you know, so we've always been about like color and flavor is really the driving factor. Like a lot of the strains, like
The terps on your guys' flowers definitely like pink. My personal favorite is the pink Picasso.
Yeah,
but like it's just,
you're gonna love the future so coming because there's a lot of pink Picasso crosses coming. Like because of that factor, like we were known like for OZ Kush with that Skittles OG terp, like. People really like that. So when we crossed that into Candyland and we came up with Picasso, like it was a strain that was so different in flavor and still is one of the most unique terpene profiles I've ever smoked. Definitely. Like it's like it's hard to describe. It's very earthy, right? That's built into the weed world with a lot of stuff, but like it has like hints of like bubblegum, cotton candy, champagne, like fizzy, you know, type of almost like Sprite or something in there as well.
But it still gives you the effect of the OG, right? Because it's got the OZ, it's the OZ Kush mixed with the crossed with the Candyland, was it?
Yeah
to make the pink Picasso.
Yeah, so they're made with, you know, two like heavy strains, because Candyland, if you go back one step there and you look at what Candyland was, it's Granddaddy Perp and Cookies were both heavy indicas. Then you have OZK and Skittles, both, you know, only low THC strain in that is Skittles, but it's super high in terpene, which is a perfect combo for OG. That's why OZK came out so special. And then you take that male and you make it with Candyland and you get the Picasso. Like, and we crossed it with a lot of things to make new strains, that OZK male. And now we have a lot of new Picasso crosses coming too in the near, you know, this, the next few months, you'll see a few of those coming out. So really just that's where the brand, I think, inspiration always came from. That light bulb came off where we were like, we want to build up this collection where we can give everybody these, this one strain that they love in this whole collectible format, but also be the guys that took the meticulous time to build out the whole fruit menu. Like strawberry.
Have it in every form and every flavor. And,
like, and have it really be true. Like this strawberry flower, like I love that strawberry flower. It's so unique, right? But like it was always the vision for that flower was to be like to showcase it, but only to really showcase it in the sense to show you that vape. Because that's where it shines the most. And that's where our brand is too, in that sense, is like a lot of these genetics that we've picked and grown and selected are meant for vape as well down that road. So when you see a lot of other brands out there that are growing, they're copying the black market, going, oh, what's hot in the street right now? It's either something, a Runtz or a gelato or a cake or whatever, right? So they think that if they grow, they hear about these crazy black market prices. Oh, this is selling for $5,000 a pound in the street. Yeah, if we put this in our brand, we're going to have the hottest shit in the store. Right. Meanwhile, they don't realize that the market it's in the store is very different from the market that's on the street, and people in the street don't want to pay those taxes at the store, and people that go to the store don't want to deal with people that are from the street. So it's a totally different customer base that you're catering your product to, and it just doesn't cross over that way. So when you offer a wide array of really good selective, you know, lemon, orange, Picasso, melon, blueberry, like you kind of cover, you know, we have the black orchid, which is super gassy, you have Picasso, which is super complex, it's not like a fruity side of that. You know, you offer one thing to different categories, right?
And yeah, and it's like you have so many different styles and flavors. It's like, I don't like the blueberry, I'm gonna like the fucking melon or whatever. There's like so many different options, something for everyone, right?
Yeah, and that was the goal, is to be like, okay, let's cover all these bases. You know, like, let's go hunt down the best strain that we find that's the best blueberry strain, or the best orange, or the best lemon. And, you know, yeah, we didn't pick these strains because they're going to sell hot in the street, because we don't sell in the street.
Right.
Like, those days are so long gone and far behind me. Like, the
now
idea.
Now you're thinking, like, fucking globally or nationwide or what? You're thinking on a way bigger scale now.
Yeah,
sure.
Now we're in Michigan.
Right.
Right, and we're about to be in a few other states this year. I can't announce which ones yet, mm-hmm. because you just don't do that till the ink is dry.
Yeah.
But there are more states coming for us. And, you know, we pride ourselves on producing the same exact quality in California as we do in Michigan. And that's why we've done so well in Michigan on the rollout there in the past month.
Consistent with the California
product. Yeah. Like, I've smoked the flower, and it's, you smoke the grape that we grow here.
Tell the difference.
And you smoke the grape when you go over there, and you're like, yeah, this exactly the same, you know. Crazy. It's because, you know, we've done this for so long. Like, we, even when we got into this, we weren't figuring it out. We'd already figured,
you've been doing it. Now it's just like, how do we do it legally,
do
and structured
legally
and under
all
these regulations and whatever, right?
That part is the craziest part, you know. And working with a big team, you know, you're used to working with 3-4 guys, you know. It's like everybody just kind of can take it when you talk shit to each other, and, you know, all of a sudden it's to be a very different business world. You know, you're hiring,
like, managing teams, and there's just a whole facility, and I could only imagine.
Yeah, you know, and people, you know, they're, you know, HR departments, you know, like, it's just stuff like that. Yeah. You just never really thought you'd ever have to deal with before. And, you know, there's a good thing for all those things to be there, but you're just not used to it, you know?
So I mean, opposite from where you came from, which I have a question for you now. Yeah. That you're like, fully compliant, dealing with all this stuff in this next chapter. Like, people, you know, you listen to all these successful people, and they always talk about, like, that one era, the era of the grind of that was like, damn, you never want to relive it, but you, like,
you love
that.
The,
that
are
was
you talking,
like,
about today.
Oh my God, that's today in 10, 15, 20 years. But, like, what was that era like for you on the come up? You know what I mean? The era that you're like the sleeping on the couch or going to the studio, like, anxious, like, oh, I'm going to go meet up with Dre, or I'm going to go meet up with fucking Exhibit and, like, bring these fools some
trying
weed.
Trying to plant your flags.
You know, like, what was that? Like, what was that era like for you?
That's early 2000s, really. Like, so I got the OG Kush strain in 98. Started really understanding that I could grow pretty good right off the bat. Like, right out the gate, like, my first harvest was like, I was like, wow, this, either the strain is just so magical, or I, you know,
I got a green thumb.
I had a green thumb, you know, like, and honestly, I think that it was a little bit of both, right? The strain is magical, and because the strain was so good, like, I gave it everything to learn everything there was. And all my friends around me were such enthusiasts too. We all were running different programs, but sharing information. Yeah. So because like, okay, so Long Beach, you're taking down 36 rooms, or 18 rooms a month, 4 rooms a week, and you're refilling 4 rooms a week. So you can learn very fast at that pace. But when you're in, like, running two lights closet, and you only get a harvest every 3 months, like, you're trying to learn as much as you can and during that process to improve on the next one and improve on the next one.
Just taking in all the data and just kind of, like, fine-tuning.
That's
it,
what,
right?
Trips me out about growing is, I mean, now you guys have it on a faster process, but even on the process that you guys are doing, and everybody's, like, trying to cross all this shit and do all this stuff that I don't fucking know, but it's like, there's that waiting game, and you got, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, just to get the data, you're having to wait 6 months just for the next, it's fucking crazy. You guys are mad scientists, dude.
It's years. I mean, you look at this strain, Blueberry Perps, right? So this is OZK crossed with Cookies and Cream, crossed with Beyond Blueberry, crossed with Granddaddy Perp. Crazy. Right? So that was 4 different breeding projects that took, you know, 5-6 years of breeding just to get to pop these seeds to get to this. Wild. Right? So, yeah, I mean, if you're willing to put in the work for years and years, and I think that's why our brand is different than others, because we don't just grab from ever the people's stuff, you know. If we
so
do
building these unique things out,
and if we do take some, like, so listen, everybody had to start somewhere with somebody's genetics. Like, I didn't create seeds out of thin air, right? So yeah, I bought seeds from DNA Genetics, I bought seeds from Crockett, I bought seeds from Exotic Mike, I bought seeds from Dying Breed and all of these, like when I was looking for new flavors and stuff, and I bought those seeds, I pheno hunted those strains, picked out the best females that I liked, and bred them with other genetics that I'd collected over the years, right? Mm-hmm. And other things that we'd acquired with OG and crosses and stuff like that. So if you show your work over the years, you give credit to the people where you got stuff, where you started from, everybody respects what you do,
right?
But when you just say that, like, oh yeah, I know, like me and my boys, he had that, you know, and you're
I did that, that's mine.
Yeah, and you're like, dude, like, bro, I've been seeing this strain for like 12 years. Like, you can't tell me you made this shit 3 years ago. Like, you're too young and you don't understand that this has been around before you even were smoking.
Right.
You know what I mean? These guys were here doing this, and I'm fortunate enough to be around that long now to, you know, over 20 years of doing it, but it doesn't mean shit. Like, I still feel like you're talking about that sleeping on the couch grind. Like, I feel like I'm sleeping on the couch grinding right now. People look at our brand and be like, oh man, like, I can't wait to be like that. Or you talk about these other brands, or like, we want to be like these guys. I'm stoked that they want to be like, I take that as a compliment.
Right.
But careful what you wish for, right? This is not easy. Like, this is a logistical nightmare trying to plan these types of strands out and packaging and try to grow your brand to 300 stores. Like,
now you're crossing states, and it's
Jesus Christ.
Logistically, yeah. I can, it hurts my brain even thinking about
totally.
It.
Totally. Like, it sometimes, like, I go, wow, what a mess that I created, right? Like, you know, like, I'm lucky that I have such great partners and better, you know, people that are smarter around me. That, you know, I feel like, you know, you're only as good as your team. You know, our CEO is amazing. You know, and he's the perfect hybrid. He's like just enough stoner and businessman to where you're like, okay, this is,
the grad's a fine line.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like he's not, you know, like a Chad or something.
He can communicate to both ends.
Kind of, exactly. Like, he can talk to the guys at Wall Street in a sophisticated level from the, you know, multi-state MSOs and stuff like that, and hang with their conversation as well as understand all the nuances that it takes to really succeed and survive. Like, I think people will be in shock, like, mark my words, take stock of who's around in 6 months from now, and who's right now to who will be around in 6 months.
It's crazy, bro. Even since we started our agency, it's been shit almost 4 years now, but just the amount of brands we've seen come and go is absurd. It's wild. It's just,
yeah, it's gonna come and go, but the next wave, I believe, will be like.
So, what do you think? Everything's getting kind of getting condensed now.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Is it's like, it's been easy to launch brands in a certain sense at certain times in the market, but I don't think it's going to be easy to launch brands again in the future.
Right.
I think that there are a lot of established brands and canopy, and people are kind of deciding who they want to stick with, right? And I think, you know, the vertical side of things, you know, just they just push everybody out and people just can't survive. Like, the hope and dream is really hard right now. Like, I feel very blessed. Like, I'm not above it. Like, we could be a victim, right? And I could be sitting here eating my words in 6 months.
100%.
You know, I don't believe that's the fate for my brand. We are continually growing right now. Like, our store has continual growth month over month. Our sales have month over month growth. You know, turning on Michigan gives us more growth and a few more states. So, but the California market, though, you know, this state is, it's
crazy.
It's like, you know, it's a beyond a bloodbath right now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, I visit farms and
right now for sure.
And I'm just seeing, you know, like, I just go home and I'm like, I feel very lucky to be still here. And I even, like, even when things were good, like 2 years ago and or 3 years ago before the pandemic and we were going, I always felt very blessed and lucky, like, to live out my dream, be able to be very artistic and creative in this process and kind of live out that fantasy of you know, being creative and being an artist. I went to school for graphic design. I was, you know, going to be, you know, an art major. I just didn't finish.
Yeah.
But that was always my
passion.
Yeah, yeah. You know, to be, you know, an artist in some sense. And even with music too, I have a recording studio. I put out Wonder Bread Volume 1 and Volume 2. Like, I put them out on my birthday on Halloween, like, for the past 2 years. And I'm going to try and keep that up, you know, just put out one, you know, instrumental album a year. Yeah. Just, to live it out, you know, be like, I'm not trying to hold back and have regret later down the road. Oh man, I should have done this. I should have done that. But
you have a huge music background too. If people listening don't know about that, like Brett was in the studio back in the day with like all the OGs.
Yeah, that time period, right? Like super blessed to be around Exhibit, Be Real from Cypress Hill. Like those guys put me in the room with so many people, opened doors, you know, with Kush as well. Like being that, you know, like, hey, this guy's got amazing weed, you should call Brett. Or like, oh, call Brett and have him come to the studio, and I'd be hanging out there, and then so-and-so is there, and they're like, oh, I need to get your number so I can get it from you too. You know, like...
Next thing you know, you're just fucking...
Yeah, you become this known person for having, like, really good OG, and I was, you know, just quiet enough and respectful enough to kind of observe, be a fly on the wall, and really be so blessed to be in the room with so many of those guys, like... When I look back, I'm like, I knew it was dope. Like, these guys were the top of the top.
Yeah, but it's crazy looking back now. You're like, holy shit. I was like, with all these dudes.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm watching the Super Bowl. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm like, you know.
Like, you knew that they were the dudes at the time, but you didn't know that in 20 years that these dudes were going to be like icons and legends. Yeah. Like, they were going to be.
You just don't know anything in your your early 20s. You know, you're just like, you're just trying to figure out like who you are, where you fit in the world. I was like, you know, my parents were. Struggling at that time, so I was helping support them, and it was you know, crazy time, and I was learning how to grow, and I was getting really, you know, I was evolving at it to where I was getting, you know, better and better, and it was like, it just became so clear that was like, I don't know if there was ever like a message from God or the universe or whatever, it was like, okay, you should do this because like you seem to know how to do this pretty well. And everybody that you share these products with or this flower, like, they give you, you know, praise for it. You know, like, it becomes very reinforcing, like, when you're like, wow, okay, like, you know, you land a kickflip and you're like, dude, you know, like, people are like, film that. You know, you're like, that gives you kind of this little,
affirmation, affirmation and the recognition. Recognition for somebody's, like, is such an inspiration. It's like a... It's like proving that everything you're doing is working or whatever. But so was the goal, like when you were younger, to be like a recording artist, and then that, and then as you were in the studio and you're hanging out with these dudes and you were growing, was it, did it kind of like turn into?
I never envisioned myself on stage ever or behind the microphone like this.
Was it more like studio, like producer, like stuff like that, right? Yeah. So that got you into the studios, and then you met all the dudes, and then they started to get to know you through the cannabis.
Yeah.
And then was that just like an organic like shit?
Well,
maybe I
should. Guitar in high school with my friend, you know, all my friends. We had a band and we'd play like Metallica and Zeppelin songs and all the typical Black Sabbath, you know, like stuff that you'd play in the 90s and, you know, playing Nirvana songs and Pearl Jam and everything that we grew up through that phase, right? So I had a little bit of instrumental knowledge, and I was hanging out at Melman's house, who was the producer with Dr. Dre on Chronic 2001, and he was co-producer. He got a, you know, co-production on the whole album. So a lot of people don't really know who Mel is, and if you look up on the back of Chronic 2001, you'll see that it's the only time that Dr. Dre gives another producer co-production on a whole album, because Mel was so involved in the production of all of that, right? And so I was hanging out with Mel at his house. He was waiting on an artist to come and an engineer, and they were late by like an hour, and I'm just like fiddling with the instruments a little bit, and then he heard me playing when he was in the other room, and he was like, you know, I didn't take much of it. I was just kind of like, oh, that's, you know, and he was like, oh, let's record that, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, but, you know, and then you just see how these guys chop it up. They lay it over a beat, have another keyboardist come and play, and as soon as he showed me how he was producing music, like, I never understood, like, I played other people's music, but until you sit in a room with a producer like that and they show you how to
see how they constructed
it, and I saw it visually on the screen with Pro Tools, you're like, there's your,
see, like, the note, just like the whole detail of like,
here's your little 16 bars of guitar right there, boom, you know, like, layer. You can see it coming, like, and then it plays, you know, like, before everything else was just magic in my mind. It was like, oh, how do these musicians sit there and count and keep their mind on this the whole time, the concentration? And that's probably why I never thought I could ever be a stage musician, because I never had that type of deep concentration where I have ADD and dyslexia. So as soon as I kind of get in the groove and I get a little too relaxed, I start thinking too much, and then I'm like, oh shit, you know, I lost it now. You know, like
overthinking it. Yeah.
But in the recording studio, you know, all you have to do is play the lick or the line. You know, you get to play it over and over till you nail it perfect, right? And then you can record it. And I'm not going to sit there and say that I'm some savant player of some kind, but I can play all the pieces and put it together like a puzzle. And I think that's kind of something that I like to do.
Yeah.
I like puzzles. I like games. I like things that kind of play with your mind, you know, the Rubik's Cube and all these things. And that's just another thing that you can do. You see all these little color grids and boxes on the screen. And it's the same thing when you're doing your video editing, right?
You know, very similar, like the layers and the different, for sure.
Yeah, and it's all like when you walk away, you have something that's tangible that you can look at and see and touch and feel. Like, there was nothing here before we walked in the room and had this conversation. Now we have all this content. You can do all this stuff with it, right?
Yeah.
And that's the fun part, to play with all these pieces after, you know, people leave. And you're like, all right, let me go do my part and go in on this. And certain people are really, you know, just they're like naturals at that, you know. And if you can get in the room with people that are like that, they will let you, you know, soak up some game. And, you know, that's what was really lucky. It was like I got to soak up game from guys like Mel and Fred Reck, who were also another producer on Chronic 2001, and then Be Real, just being around him and all these producers, just over the years, they start to rub off on you, and to the point where you're like, okay, I'm getting a Pro Tools rig, I'm getting all this stuff, I'm going to go build my own studio. I did all of those things, and I worked with all these artists. I worked, did all these songs with, like, you know, BJ Chicago Kid, like, you know, songs with big artists, but I couldn't put them out.
Yeah,
because their labels are in the way. And I just was like, okay, forget this. You know, like, I love these guys. I love doing songs with them, and I want to do more stuff with them. But I just don't understand how to get these labels to release this music. So I'm just going to put out some instrumentals, because I just don't want to be that guy who has 6,000 songs on the hard drive and never put anything out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're like, and that's how I felt. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put out these instrumentals. And the same thing with my paintings. I'm like painting stuff all the time. And, you know, it's the little things like that, right, that give you that like reaffirmation. Like, I painted this painting. Somebody bought it for $500. I thought it was like the biggest thing. And it was like, it's only $500. But to me, it was like, wow, somebody liked it enough to want to buy it and put it on their wall at their house. And I was stoked.
Yeah.
You know, that to me made me more happy and made me feel better about myself than, you know, that more than I should let it. You know?
Like, I'm an artist now.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I plan on, you know, trying to do what I do to like the highest and best level, because I do want to leave like a notable legacy of some kind. I don't want to just be like, I don't want to be average.
Yeah.
Who wants to be average?
Yeah. 100%, man.
No, I think that's like super, something we always talk about a lot is like, I don't know, it seems like everything you're doing, it's all things you love and you're passionate about, and you just organically are doing, naturally doing, and that then leads you to get in the room with these people, or your painting, or your weed, or whatever it is, where a lot of times people try to, they're trying too hard, they're trying to force something, where it seems like you're kind of just flowing and doing what's natural and organic, and that's led to a lot of doors opening and a lot of success. And
I think I have to,
we talk about that a lot, so it's kind
give of it to the weed though. I mean, honestly, like, if you just smoke the weed and listen to like what it tells you to do, like, just chill, man. Like, don't be desperate and sound so thirsty, like, you know, like, that's where people really shoot themselves, and they try to
just
speak,
just be
up,
cool, just be cool, just
pitching themselves, like trying so hard. It's just be cool,
just be friends with people, and if people really like you, they're going to give you opportunities.
Right,
you know what I mean? You'll be in the room at some point where they're like, hey, give him a shot, you know what I mean? But if you're that guy who's like all the time
constantly,
like,
selling, pitching, whatever it is,
they're gonna see your face and they're just gonna be like, dude, this guy again, like, like, I don't want to want to hear another crazy idea this guy's got right now, like, but you know,
I think that's huge for anybody trying to like get in the industry too. It's like, I don't know, I think that's like super valuable. It's just, don't try to overcommit and don't try to oversell and overpitch, and just be cool and just talk and just learn and be hummies, and naturally, organically, if it's meant to be, things will happen. And you know, you don't want to come in hot like a, you know.
I attribute your success for those same exact words, like why you guys at High Rise have done so well too. Because it's just like some natural aspect for you. It's not like this, You're not trying to be somebody you're not. Mm-hmm. You're literally you being you. And that's what I think people like. What's the right word? I think they're really good at smelling bullshit.
Yeah.
And other people that think that they can sell bullshit think people are stupid, mm-hmm. and that they can, yeah. you know, yeah. do stupid shit and no one's going to catch on or whatever. You know what I mean? Right. So I think when you are just like kind of organic, real, natural, have good intentions, like you're like, I'm just trying to do good business. Like,
yeah,
let's do things that make sense for both of us because I can help you and you can help me and all this works. I think those things, you know, your reputation starts to carry. And it's like what you guys built in the past 2 years, you can't do what you did by being a bunch of dickheads.
Right. Or else, you know, people talk. It's a small industry.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why you're like, oh, you know, that compliment you paid earlier, like, you know, I hear that all the time from my friends, too, because they're all around and they're like, how was this meeting? And they were like, mention your brand like 5 times, like, you know, yeah. like we want it to look like this, and we yeah. want the drip, and we, you know what I mean? And they're like, you know, what have you done to build that over the years to build this all out? Like,
yeah,
you think that you're gonna just roll that out and people aren't gonna notice that overnight you've ripped off somebody who's established,
been putting in the work for years and years yeah. and years and years and years, yeah,
you know what yeah. I mean, and not gonna get some flack for it, you know, like, so I think just
yeah
do.
Well, it's like, it's just being relatable, and it's like another thing too, it's culture, you know, like how many brands lack culture, like most of them. Honestly, you know, yeah. and you guys have so many layers of it. It's like you have the art, you have the music, you have like all these different kind of like layers that play into the branding and the weed. It's like all the boxes are checked, you know. It's like it's interesting.
Like, you can see the influence, you know. You can see the influence through art with your guys' brand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like undeniable. Whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's, you know, you're painting at mm-hmm. the opening of a shop or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, it's like heavily art influenced, and it's like authentic. It's not everybody uses the word authentic too. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. like trying to be authentic. What we're saying, but it's like you can, especially with the young generation, they can sniff that shit out. Yeah. Like the younger, you know, like 20-year-old kids and early 30-year-old kids, like that grew up with social media, like
yeah.
they smell that shit from a mile away when you're trying to fake some shit or just buy some shit or whatever.
I think people like underestimate the sophistication of stoners, right? They think that like, oh man, like these guys are just a bunch of dumb high shitheads that are just going to like fall for anything and we can slap, you know, stupid shit on this and pump it out to them. And they're like, underestimate a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
And that part, like, I kind of just laugh when I see it happen, yeah. you know? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, God, you guys really raised all this money, raised 50 million or 20 million, and you guys came up with this?
Right.
Like, who did you go pay that you overpaid for this terrible design concepts that have no soul, no purpose? You know, just these like very generic names and, you know, over designed. Like, I think our packaging is like, it's a little much, but it has the right purpose for the right reason, right? It's so that we could have all these flavors and you could see on the shelf if things were in stock from 5 feet away and be like, yeah, dude, get the red box, the blue box, you know,
right.
and you kind of get this color code situation happening. And so, you know, when you just have people that don't have soul in this and they come in from the Wall Street and these other places,
they're just looking at ones and zeros and shit, you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, they're like, we're gonna show these stoners how to do it.
Yeah,
you know, like
very naive coming in and thinking it's like wine, like just like growing wine, it's the same thing, right? You know, just plant some shit and grow it and simple as that.
Yeah, right? Or just buy it and rename it
or that, yeah.
you know, like, or just buy trim and say it's, you know, it's whole plant and roll just nothing but trim into pre-rolls and sell it for dirt cheap. Like, it's, I mean, they just underestimate people in so many places and so many factors. Like, stoners are just, they're going to keep getting more educated and more enthusiastic as the years go on. Like, the knowledge is just going to be keep compounding, and it's just going to be 100%. Like, it's going to be at a point where I'm like, people are going to come to me and be like, oh, I love this strain because of these terpenes and this percentage of terpene. And I'm going to be like, man, I never went that deep.
You know what yeah. I mean? Yeah, like your app on their phone weed, and shit. Yeah. And you're just yeah, like, I you know have this shit 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, some
know?
Like spectrometer thing like, on,
yeah,
you know.
Spinner,
like,
yeah, it's like.
I'm like, I, you know, grew up in a catering family. We tested everything with our senses. Does this smell good? Does this taste good? Does this look good? Like, that is the same format of the lens that we look through for strains for this brand. Yeah, you know, like, if it doesn't, you know, like, the whole numbers game, like, we're forced to play it, you know, like, with these high THC things. So I'm breeding to push higher THC into our genetics, you know, but you know, like,
that's not it. That's well, hopefully that changes in the next like year or two, right? With like terpene education, we always talk about it, even though we don't know. I could probably name two of them, but like, you know, that's also some bud tender. I feel like that's the responsibility of the bud tender in the future, right? Is like learning and understanding and explaining, and then whatever, because that's what's gonna, this whole dude, it's so funny, everybody wants a $45 fucking 34%. They don't care what it is. It's like,
you're like, is it high 30s? What's the THC? Is it high 30s? Like bro, do you even care what the weed tastes like do you want me just to spray this shit with distillate or what? Like, you know what I mean? Because that's what you're almost, I see you know, even tests of ours, like, that I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm like, this defies logic, you know, like, you know, let's see. Let's throw chaos onto my own brand, right? Right? So Bell Costa Labs, they're like one of the most reputable in the state.
Yeah, those are the homies. We did an interview with them.
This is why we work with them, because they're supposed to be the most reputable. Like, yeah, exactly. And they're right near our facility, right? So this Lemon OZK, 28% THC, and its total cannabinoids is 36%. So we're talking 8% cannabinoids and terps above the THC. That seems super reasonable and logical, that like when I touch this weed, that there is that much resin in it, right? Orange banana, 31% THC, 37% total cannabinoids. Again, another 6-7% terps of cannabinoids. And that's kind of like what I'm always looking for, is like, more of that 6-7%
sweet spot right there.
6-7% terps and cannabinoids on top of almost any percentage of terp of THC is going to be a good strain, as long as they're like not, you know, like terrible flavored terps that are not desirable. Like, I'm not a big fan of like Jack Herrera. I'm sorry, Jack, dude. You're a legend, and I totally respect you, but the lemon flavor is just not for me, like that lemon Jack. Like, this Lemon OZK is the one I like. It's got this extremely, like, orange crush lemon type flavor, too, that's, like, sweet, like, something desirable the way I would like it. The other terps sometimes are just, like, they have this greener aspect, or, you know, just not what I'm looking for. Yeah, like, green. You know what I mean? But, like, sometimes when you look at something logically, you're like, 37% or 40%, like some of these ones, you're like, fill up a glass with 40% of water, right, or oil, let's say, you know, and then add something to it and tell me what it looks like. You know what I mean? Like, just, I don't know, maybe I'm just like,
do you think there's like a sweet spot for a THC percentage, or it's like, no,
it just
like 27 or some shit, or is it just like whatever, it just depends on.
I think it's that 6-7% of
just terps. That kind of ratio between the both. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think if, you know, when you look at Skittles, like, and you test Skittles, you're like, it's high teens, low 20s with the THC. But like, crazy, I've had, it's like 6-7% terps too. But like, so you have stores like that are big name stores, be like, we won't order this unless it's over 27%.
Cause everybody's just asking, what's the highest fucking whatever, right?
Yeah. And then you just like, basically, you have now buyers and store owners dictating to what the market should be getting, instead of brands offering up new flavors and strains that could be offered to the market, because they're trying to narrow the window down to just this now. So now only this fits in the box. So now all you're going to get is, you know, ice cream cake and these certain ones that are hitting these numbers, right? And luckily, like, for years, like, we've been doing this breeding, and we used Cookies and Cream and OZK together and to create a male that was meant for high terpene and higher THC. We didn't do it because of the numbers game. We did it because we were trying to get higher extraction yields for hash washing or for BHO extraction. So we did it in the sense of, let's see if we can make a higher level of something that still has the characteristic we want, right? And I think it's still, even to this day, like, you know, you take all these extraction models and stuff like that, and you fraction out all these terps and stuff like that and to THC, and that's how we make our vape pens. We run it into a diamond sauce. We separate the diamonds into one fraction. We put the HTE into another fraction. We melt the diamonds, and we reintroduce them together. There's nothing added. There's no flavor terps. There's no distillate attitude or fillers or anything like that. But when we go to make our pens, like I've had to be doing educations actually on this for the pens to our sales guys and to like the store buyers, because the shops are like, well, how does it taste this way? And you're still having like, you know, 90% THC. What does this say on here? 78% THC. So they're like, how are you keeping your THC so high but having it still taste this good? Because the way we're doing it, we're able to put in just the right amount of terps with that to formulate that properly and have the flavor be right. Right. If I put in all of the terps back into this thing, it would be so.
It'd be like overpowering.
Yeah. Your nose would be burning. Your eyes would be burning. You'd be like super mad at me. Be like, why did you do that? Yeah. You know, like, so yeah, like, you know, the terps,
find the balance. Yeah.
The terps are the real value. So if THC is dime a dozen, really, it's all about terps and cannabinoids.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, you know, every cannabis plant has the same common denominator. Yeah, it produces THC for the most part, but the thing that differentiates them
is the, yeah,
the terpene profile.
Yeah. It's like, so that's the thing that I've always been, like, blown away by. Like, when I first smoked weed that tasted so incredible, I was like, I was already kind of a little fat kid and a foodie. And so when I tasted weed that tasted like that, I was like, it hit so many sensors in my body that I was like,
uh-oh.
I was like, wow. I was like, I know that weed could have all these flavors, right? When I first smoked, like, you know, Cali O, right? Which was the parent to Tangy, right? Like before Tangy and Crockett and all that stuff, where there was Cali O. And it was like these orange carrot looking buds, and this shit tasted like orange soda. Very much like our Orange Sunset is the closest thing to it, right?
Yeah.
And that orange crush flavor.
Switch this out.
But
so how often, like, I'm sure obviously you're just constantly working on new strains, right? How often are you introducing them?
Whenever we try to, right.
Yeah, just exactly.
Whenever you got the one dialed, it's like, all right, let's fucking.
I'm going
out
as fast as I can, people. Yeah. You know what, yeah, I mean? I'm trying because people want more and more. And it's,
how many staple strains do you have that are
like 13? Well, there's 20 staples, right? But there's 13 on the menu right now. 7 that are off. We rotating those in and out. Like this strawberry, like we just did a super small drop of that. Like, you know, 20 pounds. You know, like, and then we pulled it back again because it was like, there's so much other stuff that I want to pull out too. That's the newer strain. So it's like, it becomes a big problem for us. Like logistically, like with all of this packaging,
oh my
taking
gosh, all the different strains and flavors and color. Yeah. That's
no, it's like everybody in the brand is trying to figure out like, how do we get to this point where this can be easier, right? Like we love what we've created, this whole, you know, look and feel and stuff like that, but like it's really not sustainable for the growth of the brand long term. Of like, how are we going to be, like, it takes almost 6 months to get our boxes because everything's so crazy backed up.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
how can I stay fluid and
a couple
run the
ships
grow?
Get stuck and there goes your fucking inventory for 2 years.
Dude,
or whatever,
I'm
right?
Literally like, ordering 6 months in advance at a time every time. So we're basically ordering packaging twice a year now.
Yeah,
in such huge quantities. But how can I stay nimble and come up with new and fresh stuff and new strains and have the packaging be this way?
Right.
Right. So it's like, how are we going to figure out like some form of a transition to maybe, you know, a bag model of some kind or a universal box with like a different color sleeve over it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like people would hate us for it because they're gonna be like, we love these different color boxes.
Yeah.
I get people send me pictures of like pyramids,
yep,
where they've like taken a
window frame. Oh yeah, we got a nice collection.
Like a window frame like this, right? And like blocked out the whole window, right? You know, with the boxes. And I'm like, you know, it's gonna be tough, but I think people, the collectors who've gotten the boxes, keep collecting them because it could change. Like, we have to do the right thing for the brand environmentally, mm-hmm, for the growth of the brand. I think what you guys care about most is the product that's inside the box staying the same,
right,
and this high quality and not having to, you know, maybe I'll create a collection where there's only like three or four boxes a year.
The exclusive high-end.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then these are the ones that are like, these are just for the new strains. We talk about this all the time, you know what I mean? But it's like, it's so hard to make the change because, again, we're trapped in this cycle of how we have to order in such quantity.
Just trying to get it out right now. And
dude, the grow is like, you know, it's a massive machine that runs like that. And we're popping new strains. Like every month I pop like five new strains in the hopes that we will, you know, find the next new keeper that we can add to it. And normally like when we do five and we do 20 seeds of five different strains that, and normally out of those 100 seeds, basically, we find something that's pretty special. Mm. I think it was only like one time where we ran something like of that much. And I was like, we didn't find anything that was worth keeping. Like, all right.
Yeah.
You know, it was like they were all good, but not good enough. You know what I mean? That's the thing is like with a menu that's like this, too, like people expect you to put out something.
You have such high expectations. It's like you have to keep putting out the fucking bangers or they're going to.
Yeah, it's got to be super notable, you know, like it's. It's not special or it's not worth doing it. Like, why?
Right.
All right. I've got a question in terms of, I guess it's not even a question, but you guys just work with a lot of celebrities and, you know, you guys look on IG and always have people coming through the grow. And I don't know. It's just like another testament to like you guys having this dope brand that is appealing and it's not just the fucking random ass weed grow that people want to go to. So, who are some of the people that you've had? I know, you know, we shot some stuff with you and Noah Cyrus. I saw Ron Funches has been there. That was super fun. Yeah.
I was super shocked by that, too. I was like, who's coming? You know, and I was like, oh, wow. I'm like, this will be fun. And, Noah Cyrus was a really interesting. She was fun to talk to, and she was super into the weed. Like, I thought she was going to just kind of, like, want to take some, you know, regular photo or something.
Selfies
she,
in the ground.
Yeah, you know, she wanted to walk all the rooms. She wanted to smell all the turf.
Dude, what's the turf profile on
she
this
She was trim. You had her trim in and stuff. Yeah. Like, you had her in the trim room.
Yeah, she was really into it.
That's the pink Picasso. The pink Picasso. And then tried the vape pen. I put the orange orange card on. It's insane. But, yeah, she was super engaged that day. Like, she was really into it.
I feel so lucky, honestly, like, to have made it this far. And for our brand and everybody involved with it to be able to be, I think like we've done something special. It's not easy to build a brand at any time of any category of whatever industry it is into a multi-million dollar brand. That's not easy to do. And to have people like, you know, take notice, like, you know.
Yeah, Bieber and Snoop come to the opening of the shop, which is insane. Crazy, like,
totally, like, I'm in such a bubble working all the time that I don't get to sit back and think about this stuff that much, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even in these moments when you bring it up, I'm like, oh yeah, that did happen. You know, like or like I'll be driving home and be like, oh yeah, I should stop by the store because we actually have a store. You know, like you know, like,
it's like so many things going on, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta get to the Santa Barbara farm because we have 5 acres of cannabis out there, you know? Like it's some of it to me is still like, you know, shocking that we have, you know, being able to get here because the expectations I had was like, in my mind, when I wanted to start the brand was like, we'll have 100 light grow with a dispensary in the front of it. And we'll take the weed super fresh from the back to the front. And the Jungle Boys had like executed that. And I was like, fuck, dude, those guys, super props to them.
Yeah.
Everything they do, they did it themselves. And I love those guys over there. Right. So I love seeing guys like them still being around, and because the way that they did it like that, that's why they're still around. Mm-hmm. Like they were vertical early, right? So everybody who wasn't controlling their grow and their biomass, they can't control their destiny. But you know, those guys, they did it right, and props to them and all the success they've had, and super happy for everybody who makes it in this industry because it is such a dogfight. It is so hard, like. I'm rooting for everybody, you know, like
if you have passion. Like, if you have the people who have passion, like you meet people and you're like, you're not going to be here in 18 months. But then there's the people that you're like, you've just been seeing them grind. Even people you don't have a relationship with, but you're like, you see them around for 10 years or whatever. And you're like, dude, I know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do, but you probably, we all in this shit together. Yeah.
The stress is seasoned. Yeah. It's like, you're here.
You're bad, dude.
You know, and so it's not all just like, you know, skipping down the hallway with joints. And that's what I think everybody thinks it is at a grow. It's real hard work. We have guys who come in all enthusiastic, like, yo, like I'm wanting to get in this industry and I'm ready to work, blah, blah, blah. And we do the whole onboard thing. And like literally like the first day at like 1 p.m. they're like, man, like, this is not for me. Like, you know, like I'm like, wow, you were so gung ho, like ready to work and do all that. I'm like, but yeah, go ahead and pick up a plant, 500 plants and move them from one room to the next.
Like in your mind, it seems, okay, I'm just going to go grow weed for a living, and that's going to be, you know what I mean? But certain in reality, people, it's like, yeah, you're moving plants and planting soil and fucking doing all this shit that nobody thinks about. It's
pull
like,
50,000 leaves out of this one
exactly.
room.
Exactly.
You know, like,
dude, there's some people, and like, I don't know, we go to a lot of facilities, and most of the people that we meet are just like happy and cool as fuck. And like, you know, so there is, I feel like there's a certain type of personality that's meant for the cultivation and the you know, and those fools are in there and they love it. They're like, we're singing to the plants, we're playing music to the plants, and everybody's so happy, man. Like,
so we say, like, a lot of times we'll go and like all the office people are kind of more salty and kind of more just uptight, whatever, and then we go in the grow and they're just like the coolest people.
They're like, yo, check out this ice cream cake, it's fucking 12 week, like whatever, and they're just like so passionate about it. And it's, you know, for anybody, just talking about Noah Cyrus or whatever, any, but it's like how many times we've been to grows, you know, like fucking 100 times. We still walk in, still gonna, like, you walk in the door, not even the bloom room, you walk in the front door, you smell the flower, right off, walk into the rooms, you walk into the trim room, you smell the ISO, you smell the flower, like there's no way to not have a smile on your face. It's like these dudes who go in every day who love it, you know, it's we never get tired of it. Every grow we go to, we're like, damn, there's double decker, oh, use LEDs, oh, whatever, you know. It's like always a new experience. Walk into your guys' lemon room and it's like unbelievable, just like
the
dude.
Craziest smell.
Yeah. It's like that Disneyland ride where you're like over the California Adventure, the orange smell.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's like, are they spraying this shit in the air? I swear we've had conversations with people who thought that terps were fake, that we've sprayed on shit or whatever, but you know, dude, this is real terps, you know. That's the pen in your hand, real terps, like nothing.
You can really it's
like, that's what I want people to have, and it's like a, you know, having celebrities come, going back to that question and all that, like, it's just, it's a total mind trip. You know what I mean? When people of that caliber start to take notice of you and you're like, oh man, like, this is weird, this weed famous aspect or.
Yeah.
But I guess you could become famous for anything if you become good enough at it.
I feel like it's kind of going back to what you said earlier too. It's like, you made all these organic relationships and you're just the chill fucking cool dude with the fucking good weed. And now like, you're fucking have this crazy brand, like people want to, you know what I mean? They're like, fuck yeah. Like they're just going to pull up organically and just like want to support, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's interesting.
But the mindset, like going back to the grow, it ties in perfectly, right? Like the guys who work in the grow are a lot in my same mindset. Like we're not typically guys that are out there doing a lot of socializing. And we do, we're kind of the guys that lean on the wall that are quiet because we're stoners and we're just don't talk that much on this thing. Like, you know, I've gotten better at it, you know, like I've practiced this actually a little bit, you know, over the years of answering enough questions so I think I can hang on in a decent conversation. But most of the guys, like the reason they're so happy in the grow, that the ones that survive and in there, because they're really not guys that want to be dealing with, you know, a service type aspect or hospitality.
They want to be in their little cut servicing the plants and in their little vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in their own mindset. And it's like almost like this little Zen, like meditative place. When that's your happy place, is being around the plants and like taking pride in seeing your work like come to fruition from like how these plants were looking. And then like you made them better and you set the nets up and, you know, the water is really good. And you just see like, you know, even though the process of weed seems long, you're like, oh, it takes 2-3 months to create this product. But like over time, it seems like doing that gives you patience. And I was a very impatient person when I was young.
Yeah, it's different when you can actually see an entire process of something from start to finish. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's a
trick. It's so hard to not rush it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Dude, like when you're your first grow and you're like, you take them your first plants, like you want to, everybody wants to take them down a few days too early.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to super dry it super fast and try and smoke it before it's ready to smoke. And it's like, everybody just has to do that first time, you know what I mean? To see for themselves, they're like,
It's like a rite of passage.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, like, I should have listened. I should have waited another 5 days. And next time I'm going to do it right. You know what I mean? And then you start to learn, like, okay, like, these patience of, like, really
just
doing
these little things.
You're like, and the gratification of that difference in the quality and all these things, like, is rewarding. It's like, you know,
And working with a living thing, it's like, yeah. Working with a living thing too. Yeah. That's like depending on you to, you know, for the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish it was easier to create the product and proliferate it. Cause that's the part that I really like. I like this part, talking about the product. I like creating the product and I like sharing. I love seeing how, like, you know, people from all over the place love the product and having a good time with it. And if it's like, if you're having a better time than you were, like, and your life is this much better than it was the day, for whatever reason, this helps, you know, like, then I'm so happy about that. You know, it makes you feel like, oh man, I'm helping the world in some way. And I'm not just like taking and, you know, hurting people. Like so many industries, like you can just see that you're like, what you're doing is like hurting the world in some way, but you're trapped into that place. You know, you're like, you know, maybe you're a vegetarian or something and you're forced to work at some like hamburger place and you're just sitting there watching like burger after burger. Mm-hmm. Go, you know? You know, like, but when you get to be a part of something, you're like, dude, we get to grow this. We're growing plants. People are working with plants. People have jobs. Like people really enjoy this product and people want to say we're good at it and give us praise for it. Like,
yeah, at the end of the day, it's anything medicine, wellness, you know? So, and it's like the whole community, it's like cannabis is compassion, you know? Like we're all stoners. We're all going to smoke, going back to what you were saying earlier. It's like, you just fucking smoke some weed. You're probably going to get some more perspective, going to like chill out. You're going to flow with things more, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like just so great to be in this industry, which.
It works for some people, not for everybody, right? Like I think for myself, it's like, this is exactly what you just said. I can sit back with you guys and we can sit here and like there could be silence for 5 minutes and then all of a sudden a great idea comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, just out of nowhere, you know, you're just like something inspired this one thing to the next idea. Right. And that's how it happens for me a lot of times is like somebody will be talking about something and I'll be like, oh, that's a great idea. But if you just move this and added that, you know, you're like, now it's. I'm really excited.
That's exactly. We just get high all day and we just bounce ideas off each other. That's like what I said yesterday or the day before. I'm like, dude, this is like what we're the best at. Like he'll say some shit, I'll bounce some shit or I'll say some shit. And then he adds some shit on top and it tweaks it. And it just turns into a good idea.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's a trip. Yeah.
And you get paid for that.
Yeah. It's
it makes absolutely no sense at all that this is even a thing.
Yeah. I know. Like, right.
Like he's like taking pictures of fucking weed and just like,
just run like around Mr. Weedy and shit.
Fucking,
like
it's absurd. Yeah. Honestly.
It is crazy, right?
It's like, wild.
I'm like, we get paid for this. Like, no, this is crazy. Like, how could you be salty? You know what I mean?
No,
like,
no complaints just, over here.
Yeah.
So blessed. And it's going back, like, I think about it all the time. There's like all these people doing like real work and like they're fucking teachers and doctors and blue collar people that are like welding and building these buildings. And
yeah.
We're over here just fucking filming weed videos and shit.
It's a crazy world. I mean, honestly, like, you think about what we're talking about, right? And then you're like, okay, yeah, well, now I got an NFT project coming out, right? And you're like, what is that? You know, you're like, this whole... Yeah, you know, you're this whole thing. You're like, what is all of this? And people are like, you're talking... Are you mentally handicapped?
Yeah.
Like, are you, like, this... Like, they're just like, what are you... What? Dude. You know, like, are you spending all your money and time on this, like, theoretical... place and they're at work, you know, like selling real shit, you know what I mean? Like, and they're just like, that's not gonna happen. And then you see it now, it's everywhere, right? Like, and including us, like,
so yeah, let's ask the NFT.
Yeah, so here's a question, and you probably get this every single day, and we get this a lot, but because you guys are a brand that could totally have success in this, are you guys working on an NFT project?
We are. Unfortunately, it takes us a long time to do anything, like. we started talking about NFTs a year ago, like wanting to put them out and do it. And, but it, again, with anything that you take your time with, I think we end up making a better product, right? When you rush it out, you kind of,
you guys don't have to rush it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you can afford to take the time and do it right and put out something super dope. And then it's, you already know it's
Yeah. So that's basically what we've been doing is like taking our time and, really doing a lot of research and just watching and seeing and, you know, being lucky to have conversations with Gary Vee and other people that are big in crypto and just kind of getting their opinion on stuff. And it led to this. We're going to launch the product. Hopefully, I want to say in the next few weeks, but I can't put a date to it yet because the rendering of these NFTs in so much is it's a lot of work. We've been putting in, you know, a lot of hours on this project. And I think... people are going to be really excited about it when we announce all the utilities that are in there, because we gave people really good utilities. I think utilities that they want from us. One of them, I'll say, is gives you access to our imminent and upcoming seed line. Mm. So people have been hitting us up for years about our genetics, right? So when we release these access cards is what they'll be, mm-hmm. right? You'll have certain
they cards. Get first dibs on the seed drop.
Yeah, that's, dude, NFTs are perfect for seed drops. Yeah, we've talked about that before. Yeah. Like in cannabis, that's like the perfect fucking thing. Like the subscription or however you want to play it with seeds with your NFTs. Like I feel like that's like the best way to integrate an NFT into cannabis. Yeah. Is if you have, you're selling seeds.
So these different cards, they'll have different icons on them, and certain icons will represent other utilities within holders for that. So one will be, access to our genetics before they come out, like coming to our tasting party where we, before we release a strain.
Be the first one to try out whatever the fuck kind of thing.
Yeah, like a new strain coming is like Picasso Gak, right? Is one of the new ones coming. Like that's new, right?
Old school Gak from the 90s. The Gak, dude.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting cross, right? This melon Picasso. This it's not the melon OG. The Gak has this crazy melon, like that melon gum from like the restaurant at the end mm-hmm. of the like Chinese restaurant or something. And it has that very distinct flavor. Cross that with Picasso. And we got some really cool shit out of it. So that's coming,
interesting.
Right? So when that comes out, it may not be called Picasso Gak. It might change the name into something else, right? But before that comes out, we'll have people be able to come to that event, smoke that flower, be a part of the pheno hunt of tasting like the final last two phenos, like between the 6 and the 8 or the 5 of that pheno.
And they're really part of the whole, they're like really part of it.
And see what they think about the strain names and see what they have and be part of the conversation of that with us, right? So that'll be one of the utilities in there for that. Another utility in there will be this book. Right, it's this gold book, and I'll let you guys when you see the book.
You had me at gold book.
Yeah, the gold book is basically like if you have the gold book, you'll be having access to, like one-on-one Zoom calls with me about learning how to grow. If you want to learn how to grow,
damn.
Right? Or like these educational platforms where we'll have maybe 20 people in a room and talking about different projects from either breeding, from nutrient lines, from equipment. For automation and stuff like that. So for people who want to kind of get access to like high level
time with you almost or consulting,
that's what we feel that like what we know and if it's the access to the knowledge we have with the how things really work at scale
save people years and millions of dollars
of learning so we feel like those utilities are just some of the utilities like there's more. I don't want to give away everything. We are as well, we have bought land in Decentraland in the metaverse.
Nice.
So we're building out a Wonder Brett store, and that will tie in to the way the store is built and the way things are displayed and the access you'll have to with those NFTs to go to the store and do certain things at the store as well. So we are put a lot of thought into...
I'd say you're ahead of probably 98-99% of all the other brands in the crypto space. So.
And going back to like your brand would...
Which is, it makes sense. It's an... Yeah, just...
The brand. It just seems like why wouldn't why?
Yeah, there's too many things. It's too much. Yeah, too much. Yeah, that's dope. Yeah, I'm curious to see kind of how like more brands adapt to that and roll out their versions of it.
How cannabis integrates with the metaverse. We've been trying to think
of what our version of it's going to be, and we're kind of leaning kind of towards like an event type of thing, access to certain things or whatever.
Or for NFTs, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like it's endless potential. You know, like you could just do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, and. If the people that support you are willing to support you to do this, it's basically like this unique form of people being able to invest into you as the leader of this group, right? Like NFTs, like, the people that manage the project is really what you should be looking at, right? Like buying into this piece of, digital asset, right? Because it only gets you into like maybe a club or a party or some situation like that. That sounds cool and all, but like, who's following through?
And that's the thing.
Who's going to maintain that for 5 years? Yeah, exactly. That's one of the topics that we're talking about is like, should we have our our situation, you know, our NFT expire? Should it be only for 4 years or 5 years, and then you have the first option, you know, because you're a holder, to renew it, right? And or something like that. Because it is like,
then you're just locked into this,
like how can
any put some kind of limit right to it?
You know, you do this and you raise from this to fund this whole project, to do these things and grow the project, but
and that's one of their business you just started, and
that money has to go back into that project to fund it. If you don't have any means to raise to feed that, you know, then you're, whatever you're selling to people, whatever you're offering in this NFT project, won't be sustainable
when that runs out.
And then the second that your project manager isn't upholding the promises and the expectations, forget promises, no one promises anything, but expectations of what people think this should be, I guarantee you're going to see that whatever project that is, this tank, they're going to be like, oh, this is bullshit.
Yeah,
these guys promised a bunch of hot air, and like, I look at so many things that people are trying to do, and you're like,
it needs to be a brand that has a community already around it, or that's already
a real business, like
right.
not just somebody who came out of nowhere just with a bunch of ideas. That's great and cool. I'm glad you can, maybe you can pull that off and it works. It's great, but like, yeah, we have built ourselves a brand that is, you know, reputable and has you know, trust built in the community, that they, people look at us and go, yeah, those guys, if they say they're gonna do it, they're gonna do it. And we are, like, I'll kill myself keeping my reputation A1, because that's how I've got this far. Because there is no credit, and our whole team too, like everybody on our team, you know, they're not a bunch of slouches. These guys, they all play by the right rules and the code that got us here. Right, like, you know, just don't, just do good business, like, for both sides, and don't ever try and do any shady side, you know, situations, and you can make it very far. But so many people just think that the next person's gonna try to rip them off, so they have to rip you off because you're gonna rip me off. 100%. It's like
their trauma or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, and you're just like, dang, like, man, I can't do business with people that are this paranoid and have no trust, you know what I mean? You have to find people that have trust you can do business with,
like-minded fucking people.
100%.
Everybody's aligned in the right way and feels like, okay, this is something I really believe in, let's go. And that's super hard to find in life. Like,
it's pretty rare. Running a business, we always talk about this, it's just like kind of crazy how like most people you talk to are just like kind of lost. They're kind of just like, I don't know, it's just,
it is hard, man. You have to have your, I don't know, there's like something about like being aware of all these things that you want in life and not missing that opportunity, like all this like luck and preparation and all this stuff that combines for your opportunity at that moment for you to go the right way with something, right? Like, easily I could have like blown the opportunity of like getting introduced to the guys who had the OG Kush, and they could have been like, oh dude, don't, you know what I mean? But I was able to maneuver properly, right? And get there. But if you can't, you know, like so many people, there's this, they miss that opportunity of whether it's like the business opportunity, the love life opportunity, like, you know, it's hard to find somebody that you trust, you know, that, and to get married or do business with, or just even be a good friend that you can actually be like, I can tell these people things and they're not gonna, you know, go and say all this shit behind your back. Everybody, you know, especially if people are watching you, and then like, you know, if there's a little rumor about anybody of anything, then they want to go spread that rumor, right?
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's tough to find a loyal group that's like that, you know? Like,
and especially with your guys, as you scale, you know what I mean? It's like us, like we have a small team, like eight of us, but we're all like very tight-knit team. We're all friends. Like, I've been friends with Derek my whole life, 20 years. But like, once you start to scale and you have hundreds of employees, you know what I mean? That's got to be like a whole mind fuck, right?
It's totally tough. I mean, I only know how to really treat people like family and like a friend that I've had for 20 years. Like, I just don't know how to. It's either like you're in my life and you get this, you know, unconditional respect out the gate. But if you ruin it and you disrespect it and you do weird things, then I adjust and I limit how I interact with that person from there, right? So I go, okay, I understand what it is, this person, how they are, and I don't want to do certain things with them. I'll just
learn that lesson.
Yeah, right. You know, we can just, we can keep it cordial, we can keep it good, we can learn from each other, we can talk, we can help each other, but I'm not going to vouch or commit or, you know, want to go.
Go all in or overextend or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just, you know, you just have to learn by, you know.
Experience. Yeah. Just doing that's it. You know? It's just experience, dude.
Yeah, and hopefully the choices you make with the people you choose to surround yourself with, you're picky and selective.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Hopefully you've got a good friend that you've had for, you know, 10, 20 years. You know, like, it's rare, you know?
100%.
So.
You're
blessed,
dude.
Yeah. You know, it all has to just come down to respect. Everything.
No, that's it. 100%.
You know, if you're going to have anything that's going to last, like a friendship or a marriage, like, you have to be, you know, willing to have empathy and lots of respect and lots of patience and be able to go walk it off
mm-hmm.
when you're pissed. You mm-hmm. know, you're like, dude, just, but come back like everything's cool.
100%.
You know, like, just keep it moving. Let's not dwell on this shit, you know? Like,
keep pushing. That's yeah. it. So yeah. what can the people expect for 2022 with Wonderbread? You got the NFT, you got your shop up and running, got some new strains coming out.
Yeah. Is that not enough? I mean, what else more?
Is there anything else? We covered a bunch of stuff. Dude, we covered a lot.
Like, we had to do more already. Like that. I mean, that's we're going to probably open up another store, another state, maybe two this year. You know, it took 3 years to get this vape line to where we want it to be, to put this out. Like, we move a little slower than their average group. I mean, most people just bought distillate and fake terps and just put packaging on it, and so many times we got hit up by people like, why aren't you putting it out? Like dude,
take the extra time, get it perfect, get it right.
I wanted it to be our whole group, not just me. I mean, I speak for the group, but our whole group, you know, we wanted it to be just like the flower, like, so that when you got that real flavor like that from this flower, you could really associate it and be like, yeah, no, these packages are the same red color, but I can tell this shit was actually made from the same harvest, mm-hmm. from the same product, mm-hmm. the same genetic, from these guys that make it in these small batches like this, right? Like, you know, some people are selling, like, you know, I think we just launched our carts. We did, like, I think we're trying to do is 25,000 carts a month right now, because we don't want to run out, you know what I mean, because the scaling of it is goes quick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've already hit that goal in like the first 10 days, so we're like, fuck, you know, like, how the hell are we gonna, we just have to keep this, it works into our model, right? Like, limited and scarce and stuff like that, but I mean, dude, the growth of other brands that we're competing against, these guys are doing, you know, a few hundred thousand carts a month, you know what I mean? So yeah, we go slow, we make it right. We don't overproduce it. We, you know, so I hope people will really enjoy it. I think they will. I think that they're going to notice a, like, this is the thing, is a lot of people who vape, they've never really taken a dab, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of vapers are like, they're not hardcore mm-hmm. like that, right?
True, yeah.
So they never experienced that flavor jump that we all experienced that was so dramatic when we went from shatter to live resin. And like really good, unique strains that are in live resin. And you're like, whoa, like, this is such a different, you know, next level hash and flavor that you never had before. So I think that when a lot of people try these carts that are from the vape community, they'll have that first experience of that, like, whoa, like, this is so different than these fake terps that... And no joke, like, those fake terps are so, like, strong. Like,
mm-hmm.
like, when they say watermelon, you're like...
It's, like, too fruity. And
yeah, you're like, this. I want to throw up for how strong that flavor is. Like, you know, but I think people, when they taste real cannabis terps like that, like, think they're going to be, like, it'll be a whole new experience. And that, again, is, like, one of our taglines is, like, you know, flavor and experience over everything. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so, you know.
Mic drop.
Yeah.
yeah. Fuck yeah. We'll wrap it up there. Dude, it's an honor to be the homie and to have worked with you, Brett. And thanks for coming on the show. You guys can find Wonder Brett on Instagram, Wonder Brett_. And then what's your...
My personal one is Brett of Wonder Brett.
Brett of Wonder
and
Brett.
And that's the one where I just, like, I'll post, like, custom paintings and stuff like that, or like music and stuff like that, and
like the personal stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The brand, you know, we try to keep it more on brand with the other pages and stuff like that. That one is like the one I'll fool around on and have a little fun for myself. And
Yeah. Get a little gems on there, maybe.
Yeah exactly.
So like you get to know Brett.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm stoked to work with you guys too. Likewise, and I'm looking forward to like what we can do together over the next 5 and 10 years.
It's gonna be interesting. Yeah, next couple of years for sure. We're all just getting started, so.
I see some sort of like festival.
Oh yeah,
something's big in our future for some sort of huge show that we'll be at and promoting together.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Hell yeah. See something like that.
Who knows what the future holds?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Stay tuned, guys, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. Josh just pulled up. Fucking marketing. For Wonder Bread. What up, Josh? And thank you guys for watching. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and we'll see you guys in the next podcast. Peace.